I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind. I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind.
Yeah.
Every podcast in the village flailed about, except one, Change My Mind. I knew immediately this was the podcast for me. The most melodic song in the world could be playing. We wouldn't even tap our feet, not even move a muscle. One might assume this podcast is dead. Really fun and entertaining. I am Wesley Sykes, and through the other side of the ether is the taser face to my half-nut, Mr. Nicholas J. Eskfryer, Ravager for Hire.
I actually prefer Scrotum Hat. That was my first choice, believe it or not.
Scrotum Hat's good. Yeah, that's a good one.
Half Nut is one of the characters in this movie, right?
Yes, Half Nut and Taserface, part of the Ravagers.
Yes, Half Nut has long hair.
See how
right?
It all ties in there?
Oh, look at that. You've never done that before. That is so weird. Yeah. But I didn't realize this. I was looking up the cast for like certain some other roles in this, but he's the guy with like the kind of the side part, right? Am I remembering correctly?
I think so. Yeah. I'm sorry. You know, my wife just coming in hot, you know, right as we get on the air here, asking me if I want to go on a text food. Of course I want to go food.
What is this? Come on, Julia. She's supposed to be our number one fan. She knows when we're live.
I know.
Unlike everybody else.
But. I know. I'm just going to tell her just to order something. You know, this is a big test.
Oh,
order something
wow.
I like.
That's bold.
Yeah,
oh, man.
I know. So this is bigger. We'll see if she comes back. You know, it's usually I'm the one in the doghouse. Now the pressure's on her, you know.
I need an update on this at some point.
Yeah, maybe we'll find out by the end of the show here. Maybe that'll be the big hook on keeping people interested here. Ooh. Because, you know, our main topic may not be enough because, of course, we're cracking open the MCU rewatch vault to review 2017's Guardian of the Galaxy, Nick. But before that, speaking of travel, how far away does it have to be for you to be annoyed at a destination bachelor party?
Okay, I think I've only been to one destination bachelor party, and it kind of just worked out in a way where it wasn't really a destination thing because we were there for an alumni weekend, and we were all in Chicago already, so we did something there.
Okay.
I had one other instance that was supposed to be part of a golf trip, but I couldn't go when it was even just a golf trip. So I've never done that before, but I guess like I just don't think I'd like the idea of in general being outside New England. I mean, if it's a guy that's like not from around here, then I get it. But
yeah, but for anything, you can get it. It's still annoying. One of my buddies right now. I'm going to be a groomsman in two weddings coming up here that are 1 month apart. You know, February and March. I just found out about one of them, the earlier of the two, a few weeks ago.
Different friend groups.
Same friend groups, actually, but they're not friends. So,
okay.
Yeah, so then it's just up to us. But so one is from Massachusetts and is getting married in California, where his lovely bride-to-be is from and her family.
Okay.
So that's out there. And then my friend from Florida is getting married in Florida. Now, the Californian wedding bachelor party, I just found out, might be in Puerto Rico, Nick.
Puerto Rico.
Yeah, apparently it's cheap. You don't need a passport, of course, because it's an annexation, if you will, according to Little Giants history. and the other, the Florida bachelor party is talking about Key West. And again, February and March, all in the time here. So these bachelor parties have to occur at some point between Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's,
no,
and now.
Right? No, like, I'm sorry. No shot in hell. I might go to one, but I might even not go to either if I'm you in that case. Especially the Florida guy is different because he's already a ways away for you. So it's kind of less of an issue for you. So on principle, okay, it's already going to be a destination for you thing more than likely. But the Massachusetts guy, I already got to go halfway across the country for your wedding. Okay. I understand your family's out there, but now you got to make you go to Puerto Rico for your bachelor party. I'm sorry. No shot in hell. Nope.
Yeah, he said it's funny. I was talking to him the other day, so I was like, hey, he's just kind of telling me stuff about like the room block and different things like that. And I'm like, hey,
what's the deal with the bachelor party? Like, what are we thinking there? And he's like, we're thinking Puerto Rico. And like, without skipping a beat, I'm like, fuck you. Like, what are we doing here? Like,
yeah, I don't blame you. That's bullshit. Like,
I love the guys. Don't get me wrong, but it's, you know, we're trying to buy the house now too. And I'm like, I want to be a part of doing this, you know, like yeah. I want to do all this stuff, but I'm usually the one who's like, nah, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to do it. So then you don't get invited to stuff, you know? So it's a real catch 22 bugaboo that I'm in here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Wes, personally, like me just being like, as an adult, I don't understand how you can ask people to do that. Like, I understand the California thing. Like, it's fair. It's fair. Like, the California thing, I understand. It's where his soon-to-be wife is from. Fine. But you live in Massachusetts. Make it around here. Like, I don't care if it's in Maine. Like, that's cool. But make it around here.
Or, you know, just maybe, like, in the continental U.S., on the eastern seaboard, maybe. That's, you know, like, something along those, you know.
Sure. That's true, too.
Like, you want to go somewhere warm, I get that, too. Like, I'm cool with – I'm down with that, you know. But Puerto Rico just seems like a hassle. Like, can you even get a direct flight to Puerto Rico? Like, I don't even have that much vacation time, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So, anyway, enough about my complaining here.
You got me all riled up.
We'll go to trending now. And maybe you let us know at home before we get to the, you know, how far is too far for a destination bachelor party where you're like, what are we doing here?
I mean, God, I mean, destination wedding and now destination bachelor parties. It's just it's ridiculous. But yeah, let's go to trending, Wes. We got a couple trailers. What's the first one you got for me?
Venom 2, Let There Be Carnage. Trailer number 2 has been released today. A lot of focus on Carnage there and Woody Harrelson, who looks like he might be the saving grace of this movie. Looks to be dark, but still kind of has that quirky funniness. This looked much more serious than what was like the goofball trailer that we first saw.
Yeah, I think part of the problem that you run into with Venom and anything that's not in the MCU, because you've brought it before, Wes, what does it all mean? And when you're dealing with something like Venom that should be dark, it's like, okay, it could be dark, but you don't necessarily need to be serious either. And I think that's a challenge for anybody to kind of deal with, because like it's Venom. Like, it's not, I don't know, I just don't look at him as a serious character, like in like dealing with like development of this of Eddie Brock and whatever.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for Carnage. I like him much more than I do Venom personally. He's supposed to be all about chaos, and of course Woody Harrelson is an outstanding actor, so I don't have high hopes for this, but like I expect this. Like, I liked Venom. Like, I thought it was fine. Like, I didn't think it was like, it's probably like a C, like high C range or something like that for grading. Yeah. If you ever do a rewatch, but I expect this to be a little bit better, like a low B probably.
I would say so. I'm trying to refrain from expectations here. This just seems like it's going to be action popcorn fun, and that's kind of what I want out of it, and that's the baseline of expectations here. The Woody Harrelson thing, playing a deranged killer, we've seen that before. He is a natural born killer, some might say. But you know, I think that could be very interesting with how they talk about the origin story of Carnage, how he comes about with the biting of the hand and the blood and everything. Like, I thought that was very cool. And then, of course, everything that you see with Carnage there, like, is really badass. The CGI and everything with the tongue lashing that you get, you know, the French kissing there. I'm not sure if that's a COVID safe at this point in time, you know.
Probably not, yes. But it's Carnage. He doesn't give a shit. He's a rebel without a cause.
And what looks cool too, you see Venom scared of Carnage, you know, throughout the person. Eddie Brock kind of has to like bribe him to get him out there. But when they're shooting, they're shooting like missiles at Carnage, and he's opening up the hole, right? Usually it would reveal, you know, Woody Harrelson or Cletus Cass or whatever his name is, right? Cletus Clay or whatever. Yeah, thank you. And or Eddie Brock, right? Whoever is inside of it. But it was just a hole right in the center. So it's like the Carnage is like taking over the body of the human, of the host, which is, you know, kind of interesting. A little more of an advance than what we've seen through the first one.
Part of the thing with this character too is like Cletus Cassidy is fucked up already. Like, don't get me wrong, like Eddie Brock's not like he's an angry dude or whatever and has his own shit going on, but like Cletus Cassidy is a serial killer and everything. Right. And that's the way Woody Harrelson's character portrayal is of him too. So combining him with Carnage makes him even more vicious and makes their connection even stronger. I mean, this dude always causes huge problems in Marvel in general. So like, this is a character I've been waiting to see for a while. I understand you gotta like, do Venom first and portray, and Venom is more dynamic than Carnage. Carnage can only really ever be, I think can only really ever be a villain. I mean, there's only so much depth to him, but still a character that I want to see because he just makes a mess every single time.
Well, I hope on TLDR when that comes out a little bit later, I believe in fall, it didn't look like it had a release, an official release date. I think it just said fall 2021. So, but when that comes out, I'm expecting TLDR to do some Maximum Carnage reviews here.
Yeah,
and explain some of that.
I'll see if I can find something else Carnage related. I know Doc did some Carnage and Venom stuff last year.
This is what we talked about, Nick. I mean, this is what I want to see from TLDR is taking the source, you know, some of the source material that they're using for these movies, and then expanding upon it as like a preview for the movie to be released.
Yes. And well, guess what? When it comes time for Shang-Chi, which we did get the second trailer for that, Joe is going to read some Shang-Chi stuff ahead of the movie release.
I love it. That's what I love. And this is, hey, it's like you're a professional at this or something, Nick, because we got Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings teaser that released, I want to say on Friday, Saturday, or late last week. How's that? And that was also the second trailer, but not a whole lot of new information on that one, Nick.
No, not really. I mean, look, it's just, I think when we were talking before the show, you said the way you put it best, like just a reminder that, hey, yeah, we also got this coming too. Like Hawkeye's coming and that's going to be cool, but this Shang-Chi shit's going to kick ass. And I liked Black Widow, and I had, when it first was announced, I didn't really have high expectations for it. Then as this year progressed, I did kind of have, you know, decent ones. It pretty much met my expectations. With Shang-Chi, this is like, I really think this is going to kick ass. I'm expecting this to be like an A-range movie. Not that I'm saying I'm going to necessarily be disappointed when I walk away from this, but the action on this looks intense. And this is a character who I don't know as well as some of the other, and I can't wait for wait to learn a little bit more about him.
Yeah, I mean, I just talked about maintaining my expectations here for Venom 2. I'm throwing that completely out the window in regards to Shang-Chi. If you go back to previous episodes, this is my most anticipated film of the summer. Here with Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Again, I know nothing about the character, but everything I've seen seems really exciting. I'm all for the introduction of a, you know, little new lifeblood, a little new flavor to the mix here of the MCU. So I will be very disappointed if I don't like this movie because I think I'm very excited for it. So that's just kind of how the things work, right? You're high expectations, high letdown possibility.
Yeah, this is the thing with
It's going to pay off.
Yeah, the thing with Shang-Chi and any, like, we knew with Black Widow, there was only going to be so much in terms of moving the MCU story forward. I believe that going in. With this, I expect them to move it forward in some capacity, of course, but then we just got Loki and everything. I don't necessarily know what, but, like, with Loki, I went in and said, okay, we're at least going to get the next step in the MCU. So, like, what is going to happen? We got that. Outside of that, I don't know. I was so up and down with Loki. I liked it a lot in the end, but I when it comes to the story, like I think we're just going to get a ton of action. We're going to at least get the next step in the MCU. From there, I'm not sure what to expect. Like, I can't begin to wrap my head around it. You know what I mean?
Just give me some good action. It's going to be, you know, ground-based, I imagine. I don't think it's going to be dealing with too much of the cosmic mystic stuff too much. I don't know. I don't know. Who knows? Whatever. I'm not going to speculate. Certainly. I'm just going to accept it for what it is.
Well, until you start seeing rumors over on YouTube or Reddit.
When it gets a little bit closer. Yeah, of course. But until someone who is not accepting for what it is our girl ScarJo, Nick, who is suing Disney over their decision to release Black Widow on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And apparently this is could get a little messy, Nick.
Yeah, apparently, Wes, I believe the Wall Street Journal that I saw this with.
Yeah.
That she was supposed to – her pay – whatever came in from the box office was apparently based off of her pay was based off of that, I guess, the success at the box office.
In the biz, they call it points. You're getting points on the movie.
There we go. Thank you. So when they go and release it on Disney Plus, of course, that's going to impact things. Like my dad, for example, ended up watching it at home because I needed to rewatch it after I saw it in the theaters. So I went and got it on Disney Plus. I share it with him. So he didn't go to the theaters. He didn't have to pay for it. So, like, that's someone you lose right there. And my mom probably would have gone with him, too. So that's $30. Not a big deal. But when you do it a bunch, Keith watched it at home. Davey might have watched it at home. You watched it at home. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if Mac and Goo did necessarily, too. But it starts to add up. And it's all about convenience. So I think, I know there, it seems to be like, you know, like when athletes get upset about, or like when they go and opt out of contracts or complain about money or respect or whatever this bullshit it is. Like, I understand, like, people get annoyed with that, but this to me is absolutely different. And I am actually on ScarJo's side in this.
Well, yeah, so apparently it was a breach of contract where they weren't supposed to do the same day release. There was supposed to be some sort of staggered release where maybe you get 2 weeks in theaters and then it goes on some level for some amount of money to buy on Disney at that point. But on the same day release, that was where the breach of contract apparently happened. And that's where ScarJo is so upset about. Again, costing her X amount of money where the majority of her contract was tied to revenue, right, from the box office there. And, you know, in theory, this Disney Plus stuff, I think, makes a world of sense from a business standpoint for Disney because, you know, you may get less, right? I think they made less money off the Disney Plus streaming than the box office opening weekend for it. However, there is more slices of the pie that get divvied up between just distribution rights, theaters, all that stuff. Streaming on your own platform that you built, you're getting a bigger slice of that $60 million than, say, I don't know, the $90 million that was in the box office or whatever the case was. Great for Disney Plus, but again, that really circumvents a little bit of a loophole there and, you know, paying out one of your high-priced actresses and stars in this movie, right?
Yeah.
Or this genre.
I think they just got to come – like, I think that this will, for them, impact – you said it was the points system, I guess. I'm sure it'll impact how much they do that going forward or to what level.
Oh, no, that's a very common thing that they do in movies. Like, that's just a thing. Like, that's
so really, I would imagine for Disney, then, if they're going to continue to do this, I would think it has to impact how they handle it in some capacity. Either they have to factor in the streaming service or they have to.
See, I think it has less to do with like giving people points on the movie or whatever, or revenue sharing. I think it would be more have to do with how they go about with Disney Plus. Like, that's just like something that's like a part of the business. Like a sign, like think of like how sign in trades work in the NBA. That's like unique to the business. Like the point, the revenue sharing, like in Hollywood movies. Like, that's just something that happens. Like, that's
gotcha.
Like, a regular thing, yeah. So that I don't think that's going anywhere. But
so
I think
Plus
Disney Plus Premier Access, I think that could, have a little bit of an effect there of how, you know, same day release or something to that. But
that's too bad. I wish that they could just. I would rather than try and figure out, adjusting the point system. I understand it may have always been the case. That's fair, but why not go and try and alter it in some capacity? Because I think that Disney Plus Premier Access is going to be something that people want going forward. Because Disney Plus isn't the only one that does this kind of thing. I mean,
it's a gamble,
right,
Nick, though. That's kind of what you're thinking, though, right?
Like, I guess that's true.
Point on it. It's like, you're paying less up front, and if the movie's a flop, then it's a flop. Then you're not paying as much for your top flight actress if the movie fails. But if it does well, then it's actually not even like, much money out of like the pocket of Disney at that point. It's just coming out of the revenue.
True. So then, but then couldn't you, in theory, factor in what is made on a Premier Plus, Disney Plus then, and then factor that into the points?
I would imagine so. But again, I just wonder if they just like, we're just not going to bother with it. Same day release. You know, if this is what it's going to run into.
I mean, that's also fair too, because you can't go and screw over your like big time actors and actresses like this.
Yeah. And apparently, I don't know if this is fence sitting on Kevin Feige's part here, but he it was apparently leaked that he was not very pleased with how, Disney went about it, and he tried to kind of play the middleman, so you can't do this, and kind of go to bat for ScarJo a little bit. But obviously that didn't happen. Who knows if that's just him trying to do some damage control or something like that, But it doesn't matter anyway. Scarlett Johansson's contract is up. I think they've said previously that they don't plan on bringing Black Widow back into the fold, or at least this iteation of Black Widow.
Right.
So
we'll get White Widow. That's what we're going to get. That's what all the movie Black Widow ended up being about in the end, right?
So. Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. But crazy, crazy drama nonetheless.
Yes. Let's head over to the comic book minute before we get into the real MCU topic we're talking about today. So for DC this week, we have Suicide Squad : Joker 1. So this is going to involve Red Hood in this. So I am all in on this series. We have Joker Presents Puzzle Box, which is, I believe, by Matt Rosenberg, who's been on a heater for DC of late. That's the first issue of that series as well. And I believe that those are both Black Label, DC Black Label series. Then for Marvel, we have Spirits of Vengeance, Spirit Rider issue one. We have Ghost Rider, who's going to be a female. So we've had Robbie Reyes. We've had, oh my God, what is Nick Cage's, Johnny Blaze. But now we're going to have a female character in this role. So I'm excited to see that little twist. And then we've gotten some anthology series from DC and from Marvel of late. For Marvel, it's been Black, White, and Blood. And then the character name at the beginning, we got Wolverine. And we've gotten Carnage. Both were, I thought, pretty well done, successful. You get a bunch of different writers involved. Now, we're also going to get a Deadpool run of this as well. That starts this week. I know Tom Taylor is doing a story for this first issue. So if you're just a Deadpool fan and you're always like, I want to read Deadpool, but I wouldn't even know where to begin, blah, 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 you can just pick this up. Or you could say, I'm not going to pick this one up, and I'll pick the second issue up. And it's all the same. And you're just going to get 3-4 random stories from Deadpool's time. Like, it's in between things that have gone on in his life. And it's, I think that this is an outstanding thing for, like, legacy characters.
That sounds great. I'm a little bit intrigued. You know, I have 1.5 hard nipples going here. Not because the AC was blowing on me.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. Well, hopefully this gets you full hard nipples, 2 full hard nipples, or 3 in your case. TLDR, this week we're talking about Radiant Black and Shadecraft, both Image Comics books. And look at that. Wes's nipples got soft again because he hasn't heard of either of those. But Joe and I have been waiting to talk about these two titles since they first dropped. So that both – one is on pause after 5 issues because of – they didn't plan for it to be a huge boom and they had other stuff planned. So they kind of have to put it on pause right now. And then Radiant Black by Kyle Higgins is going to keep rolling. But Joe and I cannot wait to tell you guys about these two books. So that'll be on Wednesday, normal time, 1:30 over on the stream. But yeah, very excited for those.
All right. I love it here. Get back to TLDR on the normal, your normal routine, huh?
Yes.
Regularly scheduled programming.
Finally, right? Took Joe going on vacation and slacking over there golfing with you and hunting geese and stuff.
Yeah. You got to hunt some geese when you're out in the Cape here. It's a time old tradition.
Yeah, of course.
That and, Bear Weekend out in Provincetown, you know?
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Okay. Well, I don't know how to segue into what we're talking about today off of that, but we are talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 for our MCU Rewatch Vault. Wes, can you hit the people with the synopsis?
I sure can, Nick. The Guardians struggle to keep together as a team while dealing with their personal family issues, Bor, notably Star-Lord's encounter with his father, the ambitious celestial being Ego. I did some editorializing with the Bor in there. That was not a part of the synopsis.
Oh, look at you. That's some fancy stuff. And that's ad-libbing, too, on the fly.
Yeah, on the fly.
And
the
see, fly. This shows who's the Ron Burgundy of the two of us, because I can't do that.
I still think I'd take that, actually. You'd be surprised, yeah.
No, I've seen it. I've seen it in action before. I would never deliberately do that to fuck with you, but like,
it could. It's yeah, very
because I'm like, if I did this, I would. It would absolutely happen.
I'd be like, oh, come on, man. What did we do? Like halfway through, I'm like, oh shit.
This is written and directed, of course, by James Gunn, starring Chris Pratt as Peter Quill, Star-Lord Zoe Saldana as Gamora, Dave Bautista as Drax, Bradley Cooper as my guy Rocket Raccoon, Vin Diesel playing Baby Groot. We have Michael Rooker as Yondu. Karen Gillan as Nebula, Palm Clementife as Mantis. I apologize, Mantis. Sylvester Stallone as Takar Orgord, also known as Starhawk, and then Kurt Russell as Ego.
Yes, this movie made $864 million. That's $390 domestically, as well as $146.5 million on its opening weekend. The $864 million ranks 12th out of 24 movies in the MCU. That's smack dab in the middle for those who can't do math at home. Ahead of Guardians 1, ironically, and behind Spider-Man Homecoming. It has a 7.6 out of 10 on IMDb, an 85-87 split on Rotten Tomatoes. And as we continue to solidify that third number in there, we have settled on Google reviews, it feels like. So 4.5 out of 5, although I feel like it's tough. Like, I kind of find this with the Dork score and the Infinity Stones. Like, you're really, like, you have a lot of things in the 5 range, a lot of things in the 4 range that aren't necessarily, you know, equal to one another, you know?
That is why our system is the best. I understand it. Like, I know.
Gold standard.
my guy Eddie's Toy Box likes to rip us for our boring ass system out of 100, but it's like,
well, it's complex though, you know.
I mean, if you're gonna do it out of 10, okay, fine, then you're just using a decimal instead. But personally, I'd rather have whole numbers. So it's funny, we rip Rotten Tomatoes. We haven't done it in a long time. We haven't done one of those deep dives in a long while. But
yeah,
we use the same system as them, and I like it personally. I just keeps it simple because yeah, Dorks, it's a tough one for them.
And speaking of Rotten Tomatoes, it finds right – it kind of lands itself with the score of an 85, 87, like kind of right within the world of where we live too. So,
yes, yes.
What do you have here for a score and tweet length review?
Yeah, normally we're not so far apart on with IMDb. You're not as far apart as I am, but I gave this an 88 out of 100. I was battling between 88, 89, maybe 87, so I settled on 88. I remember initially being a little underwhelmed with this movie when I first saw it in theaters because the first movie just set expectations so friggin' high.
Sure. Yeah.
And how, I mean, it's, I don't think anybody could have like gunned
them. Yeah.
Exactly. Gunn had no control over that. But anyways, but this is, I think, immensely rewatchable. I've rewatched this, I want to say like four times since it first came out. And it teaches us a valuable lesson as said by David Hasselhoff at the end of the credits. We are Groot.
Yeah, I mean, something, you know, better left unsaid, but you know, we got him anyway.
Yes, that's the perfect way to put it. But what did you give it?
Yeah, so I gave it an 81 out of 100 here. That is a whole 11 points off of the original score of Guardians of the Galaxy. It's 92 for me here. Mm-hmm. But it's not as good as the original, no doubt, but still hits on what made the original so memorable. That is the banter and the action is on par, but I ultimately don't really care about any of the storylines or the motivations here. This is a bottom tier movie in the MCU as far as rewatchability is concerned.
Mm-hmm. And so that puts us at an 84 and a half, I believe, when you combine our scores together, right?
Yes, an 84 and a half. So of the 16, 17, 18, 19 properties right now in the MCU. So that is 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. This ranks 12th right now out of the 19 properties with an 84 and a half. Just barely behind Black Widow, which had a score of 85, and slightly ahead of Iron Man 3 with a score of 84 there. So it's nestled tightly into the top 10, but not for very long here, because this next coming, before we really dive into Guardians 2 here, the upcoming stretch after Guardians 2 might be the best three-run movie, you know, that's not including like an Avengers, you know, team-up movie.
Right.
In the MCU, and that's Thor, Ragnarok, Spider-Man Homecoming, and Black Panther.
Yeah. Yeah. Ragnarok may end up being the highest of that for us. It's definitely like without rewatching it, it's definitely the highest on my list.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little more partial to Spider-Man, so that's my guy. But we'll get there when we get there. But again, I think when Marvel's really hitting its high peak here. And this is a little bit of that lull before kind of going back up to that upward trajectory.
And I think, well, you know, the villain, I think, is a big part of the problem in all this. And that's usually what it comes down to. And I'm not usually one to take that route, but it's a weird situation. And I know we're going to talk about Ego more as we go along this, but I don't want to jump around on the categories on us. We always start with the On Your Left award when we do our MCU rewatches. For the most rewatchable scene, Wes, what do you want to nominate?
Yeah, I think, go pretty early, right, with the opening credits following the cold open there with the fight scene on the Sovereign with Baby Groot dancing in the foreground to Mr. Blue Sky, to that huge octopus-like being. Again, I think that sums up everything what this movie is great, what people love about it, with the soundtrack, the fun banter that's back and forth, the great action, CGI, and cool special effects and everything. And really that creativity that comes from the designing aspect of everything. Like, I just love the color scheme and then like how they come up with the characters and stuff. Like, I think everything about that, again, is a good microcosm of why this movie and this series is a success overall.
Yeah, that's a solid one. The detail that you found about this one too, I don't know if you want to save it for the Internet Sleuth Award.
Well, I think it just makes it better. It's not that. I think it's out there if you've seen YouTube video and stuff like that. James Gunn did the motion cap for Groot there dancing, in the opening scene. So apparently it took 2 years to complete overall, which I thought was kind of interesting. Yeah,
that's the part I was not aware of. 2 years to complete that thing? I mean, I don't know how that would happen, but It makes him a lot more impressive for sure. But I like.
And again, maybe that's just something like he had an idea for and then started it, you know, recording, you know, just video of himself on his iPhone or whatever, and then kind of had it, you know, develop once the movie got greenlit and everything like that. You know, so I wonder about the lore of that actual for the 2 years of it. But that's fair. You know, it's cool nonetheless.
That's fair. And look, the opening credit scene, I thought it was solid. It was not even like before even looking at like what you were thinking for your nomination stuff. I wasn't even on my radar because to me, there are two that are head and shoulders above the others, but I'm going to start with my one honorable mention. And it's because kind of this is more of a moment, but when Gamora starts firing off that big ass Ravager gun Nebula came flying in on that ship after her, when she's like screaming and holding off that big ass gun, like that's something that is absolutely out of a comic book, and you don't. Like, it's just so, like, gaudy and ridiculous. Like, that's something, like, Cable would carry around a ton.
Right.
And yeah. I just love that moment, and I thought it looked great. I love that they spent, like, a good, like, 5 seconds to her just doing that alone. Even though it didn't, like, kill Nebula or anything like that. I didn't necessarily want that to happen, but I love that.
Pretty bad shot, right? Pretty bad aim for Gamora there on that one. But she is a, you know, swords. That's her thing. So.
Swords are her thing. So that's a moment. But we're doing for scene. So I would say you have Rocket versus the Ravagers in the woods on Burhart. And then you have Yondu and Rocket's breakout, which is more of a Yondu thing. As, you know, Groot gets his little moment and Rocket gets it kind of at the end. But it's more of Yondu just – we saw what he did with his arrow in the original Guardians movie, but this is just next level craziness. He's taken out all his guys that, you know, screwed him over in the end. To me, this is the moment I think of. Like, we got the Rocket versus Ravagers in the trailer, so like that one sticks out, but Yondu getting out with his fin and everything, to me, that is the most memorable thing from this, most rewatchable scene, rather, from this movie.
Yeah, the breakout from the jail is great with the slow motion walk and the music and everything. And then again, just how calm, cool, collected. That's a reoccurring theme that I like in kind of my bad guys or my anti-heroes here is just the calmness of which they do things. You know, it's not anything they're too excitable. And that's what I loved about Michael Rooker there. And that's what's so cool about Yondu. So he doesn't have to do anything, right? He doesn't have to lift a finger to like cause, wreak havoc across a whole army. So I'm agreeing with you there. I almost added this. And then when I watched yours or saw that your note there, I'm like, I'm good with that.
Someday we need to do like a ranking of the MCU characters in terms of like their physical like prowess or whatever. Like we could just do it with the heroes or something to that effect. And if we did a lot of characters, I think we'll talk about this more off air sometime, but I'm very curious where Yondu would fall in all this. Cause of course, physically he's not much for a fight, but that arrow and hit and his fin make him, I don't want to say top 10, but I think he'd be a lot higher on the list than people might initially think.
Yeah, I mean, he's really like a human crocodile or something like that, right? The fin is the medulla oblongata, you know, otherwise you can't get to it. You know, you get to the medulla oblongata, that's the weak point, right? I believe it's right in the back of the head there.
Maybe
the medulla oblongata is in the front, but whatever. The spot that they're protecting in the back of their head where their skull and neck connects, like that's like their weak point. That's, you know, Yondu's fin, and you can't get to him otherwise. But when you get that, you know, that's the little hole in the Death Star there.
That is true. I'm curious if anybody who's like of our age range can hear medulla oblongata and not instantly think of Waterboy.
Yeah, that's how I think. Yeah, someone will correct me on that one. I'm sure. Maybe the medulla. Maybe it's two different things. But it sounds right though.
I don't think you're wrong, Mr. Colonel Sanders, man. But either way, let's move on to the America's Ass Award for what aged the best.
Yeah, again, I'm going with the soundtrack. This is another major player here. This could be up for best supporting actor, or best performance by a side character role here. I think that's something that we even brought up previously in the first Guardians movie here, that this was, you know, so prevalent. And the soundtrack in the first one, I think, going number one in the Billboard charts. This, again, tells a lot of the story when you're even talking about Brandy in the opening scene with Ego and I forget her name. What's her name?
Quill, is Nancy
Quill's mother as well. Is Melissa, Melinda, something like that. But at any rate, you know, that is essentially the mother's story. You know, so it kind of tells that as well. So it's pretty, helps kind of push the storyline along a little bit.
Meredith Quill was the name.
It's right around it.
Yes, much closer than I was thinking. For me, I think that you're correct that What Aged the Best is the soundtrack. But my nominations that I came up with in addition to the soundtrack were the movie as on the whole. And I understand for you don't necessarily feel that way. But for me, I walked out of that theater thinking, this is probably like, you know, we weren't doing the podcast yet at that time, but I would have probably given it like an 80 to 82 range. But for me, the jokes just are so like, there is a specific line from Rocket. It's a longer one and we will share it here later on. But yeah. For me, that is like pinnacle, like Rocket. And what may be the funniest thing I've ever heard in all of the Guardian shit. It's just, I love that. And so that for me, the jokes aged so well from all this. As much as I understand the plot was not necessarily the strongest, and you know, Ego leaves a little bit left to be desired. The other thing that aged really well, I think, was Groot's explanation for hating hats. One minute you think someone has a weird shaped head, the next minute it's just because you realize part of that head is the hat. I think it's a fair point.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the better parts. And again, I think just overall, to your point, I think you'll love this. Is Rocket Raccoon, you know, really is aged the best in this? I think, you know, he's a little prissy, you know, throughout all of this. He's a little sensitive, a little too sensy for me. But overall, he's very, very quick way. I love all that stuff about him. So I think he's really, you know, on display throughout all of this. But I think to jump into, you know, the Mirror Match Villain Award, to what aged the worst here, to kind of counteract your point on the movie as a whole aging the best. You know, I have the movie overall aging the worst here just because from a sequel standpoint, it goes back to this origin story formula, which I've been saying, you know, going back to Doctor Strange and some of the other origin stories throughout, you know, phase three now. I'm just kind of sick of the formula. I'm sick of what they're doing here. You know, you already had this great, you know, introduction of these characters that brought them together in the first one. And instead of continuing that journey and going on through that, you go backwards into the life of Peter Quill. You go backwards into the life of Rocket Raccoon to a degree, and Yondu. You go back into their story. And what I loved about Spider-Man Homecoming moving forward is that you didn't have that there in the origin story. There were some things that were just kind of understood, and maybe you don't have to explain Star-Lord's father and who he is. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Maybe there's other ways that you don't have to spend the whole movie discussing fatherhood and your lineage and your background.
I think along all that, like, as much as I still like this, and we both still, I mean, 81 is still a good grade. If you're getting a B minus, I mean, hey, you're in business or whatever you're doing in life. But but when you start out with like, I think I gave it a 94 and you gave it a 92, something to that degree, you would think with the sequel, now that we know these characters more, they're going to be better. But part of me wonders when, like, as we look at this in a deeper sense, like even with my grade, with it being lower than what it was, it's like, I can't help but wonder if they felt like forced to kind of move the things along for them a little bit, for the Guardians, like get something out there again for them that maybe was important but not ultimately too consequential in the grand scheme of the MCU thing, so that way we could just get another Guardians thing out for everybody. And like, look at what happens to Peter Quill,
right? It was a quick turnaround.
Yeah, exactly. So like, even with like Peter Quill, right, like you develop him into something more than the Man, which I think ages poorly in all this, because he also doesn't, like, you know, it's a non-factor moving forward, and like, he screws things up and whatever. Like, I think that when you go and give him something like that and take it away, it's like, okay, that to me right there, that moment is like, you wanted to get stuff out with him, but you couldn't go and impact the MCU with their stuff too much just yet.
Yeah, and I think too, this is the issue that you run into with these big ensemble movies, is that you worry about jamming in too many characters. So the characters that maybe, and going over the production and some of the Wikipedia notes of this movie, you know, they thought about bringing back Glenn Close or John C. Reilly to do the Nova Corps, or, you know, play a bigger role of Adam Warlock, which you have here, which we'll get to in a moment, that he was going to be playing a bigger role. And that obviously didn't happen. And that was a big thing that James Gunn was talking about, is that you already have these big characters. You know, do we introduce Carol Danvers or Richard Rider at all? You know, and security have five or six that you want to explore. Mm-hmm. He kind of wanted to keep it self-contained, and then, you know, at the risk of otherwise bringing in, you know, convoluting a movie and just flooding it with characters for the sake of just throwing in names.
Yeah, it's tough. And that's absolutely. And if you go and bring in Adam Warlock, a Carol Danvers, okay, I hear that. Maybe you could have found a way to make that work, even if you just see her for like a little bit, like somehow she's mixing things. But in general, yeah, I think it would really complicate things. I think that's why we haven't still gotten Adam Warlock, because that's the other thing too. We get introduced to this character and it's like, okay, great, but we still haven't gotten shit, nothing to do with him. So I think that's another thing that is worse, is like the introduction of him. How many times have you brought him up? I feel like in the course of our show, there's been quite a few times where we've discussed the MCU at large and you're like, I'm waiting for Adam Warlock. He's probably number three on your list besides Secret Wars and the Thunderbolts. Seriously.
I mean, I haven't thought about him for a while, but I think when we've been going back to Avengers Endgame and just kind of waiting and kind of guessing to be what phase four was going to roll out to be, right? We all thought that he was going to be playing a bigger role. I got a little more information about him later in the categories down below about why he wasn't used a little bit further. But yeah, I mean, that's a huge cock tease that has yet to be paid off. And who knows when, right? I mean, Guardians, the holiday special comes out not this coming Christmas, but next Christmas.
Right.
And then the summer after that, 2024. Is Guardians 3 at that point? I who knows? It's so far down the road there, knows what you're going to get from that point. I think the introduction of Adam Warlock, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, and then you have a couple other nominees for this?
Drax, he's a little one note. I think even the actor there, but Dave Bautista, has said that he didn't really like with the direction that they kind of took Drax in. He's a little one note in this, right? Just about the joke. It's not as serious, but he's also really mean to Mantis. It didn't really hit to me.
I thought that him being mean to Mantis was like a fourth grade boy, like bullying a girl that he likes, just like that. That's what we all did at some point. Like we weren't nice
to
them, right?
He still talks about like his love for his wife and everything like that too. That feels like he wouldn't find anyone else again either.
Well,
kind of felt like
it feels like that. But and then even at the end, like he says, like you are beautiful, and then he goes on the inside. It's like okay, it's still kind of on brand, but like, I don't know. After everything that just happened, I don't know. It's very confusing. I'm not sure how they feel. And we haven't really gotten a chance to see them move things forward with their relationship. And it looks like it's going to end for Dave Bautista after Guardians 3, right? I mean, the way he's about which he's in, like, I understand you feeling that way about Drax West, but like Dave Bautista needs to get over himself a little bit. Like you're a big deal, and maybe he's just playing the game like he did when, I don't know what his like experience was like in WWE, but like maybe that's what he's trying to do, like stir the pot and whatever and all that shit. But
hey, close mouths don't get fed.
I guess that's fair. That's fair. That does make sense. And then you had Eagle, I think, also for what?
Yeah, and again, for a lot of the same reasons that we touched on. I was not interested at all in that storyline or what he had to do or his like sperm shaped space vehicle and stuff, like everything that he talked about, like it had to do with like planting seeds. It was all very sexual.
Yeah, it was quite sexual, actually. That is a good point. And that actually kind of brings us into the Quantum Realm Award for unanswerable questions, Wes. How many women did Ego impregnate?
That is a million-dollar question, right? We see all the bones hanging up after that. That is all his kids that we
I believe that's also his money too.
Right. Could be from a different universe. I don't know if the multiverses are colliding at that point, but
yes, I'm not certain. Or is it the worms that they're dollars? I don't know.
It's a million-dollar question, isn't it?
It is. I think you have a question about Ego's occupation that I'm actually curious about.
Yeah, I mean, just to throw a number out there though about the Ego impregnant. I mean, it has to be like, this is over lifetimes, right? So, I mean, way more than Will Chamberlain. 10,000?
Yeah.
100,000? Did you say 100,000?
I mean, Wilt is no longer with us, right? So I'm going
to
RIP and no disrespect, Wilt, but I do think that Ego's got you on this one. I would probably, Wes, if I had put a number on it, I would say north of probably, I guess it's got to be north of a million, right? At least.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm going to go. I'll go under on that one. I'll go $1, Bob. We'll do the Price is Right rules here.
Okay. We got to add James Gunn and ask him what the.
Yeah, maybe he'll come out with an answer here. Yeah. Was Ego a hippie drug dealer on Earth during the 70s? And did you get that vibe there? He's like taking this girl to the back of the woods. He wants to show her like this cool plant that he wasn't sure it was going to take, man. And then it's going to take over the whole world, man. It's awesome, man. Just wait. You know, it's just in his car. He's got the leather jacket with like the frills on the back, with this like waspy mullet hair that's like permed and stuff. He was definitely selling some wacky tobacco.
He could have at least given off that vibe. I think he did. I think you're spot on with that, because he's not going to come in as like this cool badass or anything necessarily.
It's a metaphor, you know. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, look at you. You are so deep, Wes.
Let's
make
you sound smart.
Yeah, well, you don't need to try. You just automatically sound smart.
That's a reference to Loki. But you didn't care for Mobius or Loki there.
Yeah, you better not say it's over my head, because you know that anything that is over my head, I would catch it.
Oh, there you go.
All right, let's see. The other one that I have too, I know you got a couple, but for me, the other burning question at the end of all this was, what did Groot throw up after that jump to hyperspace? Like, what, maybe the candy he had earlier?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe some maple. Like, what does a tree eat?
Apparently just Skittles, I guess. Yeah. Or do they even have Skittles out there? I don't know how that works. I mean, if someone told me Skittles were like an alien food, the food that we got from aliens or whatever, yeah, I could buy that.
Yeah, well, we get it from Marshawn Lynch. That is close enough. How in the sweet Jesus' name does Drax and Gamora live through the crash on Bearheart there, where he's like strapped outside in space and he's killing her, and then like, you know, Gamora has her Captain America moment, which, like, I wanted to bring this up when you were talking about the gun moment, because, like, the gun that she has on her shoulder is from a spacecraft.
Right, the Ravager ship, yeah.
She's just holding that on her shoulder blade, you know, like, it's no problem. Like, if I'm not mistaken, Gamora is just, like, really skilled at fighting, right? She's not, like, enhanced.
Well, she's not a human. So, I mean, and for her to move like she does, I mean, we've seen her kind of jump like crazy too. Like, she is definitely stronger than like the average human. So,
yeah, but I mean, that's like really like some of the stuff, something with Drax. Like, how does like Drax, like, you know, just not get his limbs torn off, his torso torn off there throughout the process of that?
Drax is absolutely a fair point. In that whole experience between, for the two of them, is absolutely a fair point. My thing with Drax is that he is a character that has been written so like in terms of his strength has been toned down in the MCU. So like, I don't have a problem. Like, it's a very fair point, but I don't like when I see something like that happen. It's like, well, for the character in the comics, it makes sense. So I don't really give a shit, but it's a fair point.
Yeah. Who knows here? Again, why were they so hell bent on dealing with fatherhood in this story? You know, and like the relationships with Ego, like not like Ego the character, but like Ego, you know, within your conscious and within yourself here and your mind and everything like that. Because again, I thought the Sovereign storyline was kind of compelling, especially if they were going the route of Adam Warlock and if they really kind of, you know, went full into that. The Ravager storyline I liked, but, you know, we get no Nova Corps or anything like that, or any real ties to the MCU other than, you know, the Nebula Gamora storyline and like a few other things here or there.
Yeah. Again, it's just proving the point that we're talking about earlier. Like, the Guardians were so popular that they needed to get a second thing out, but they needed to keep it like contained. And it's so hard when it's a space thing, I feel like, to like Star Wars, they're kind of doing it with stuff, but it's still I think a huge challenge when you start bringing in like this vast galaxy or vast universe, whatever, or multiverse. Now it's hard to do things that are like grounded within that stuff, because it's just like, how does it not impact things, or how do you not run into Thanos? Like, how does he not show up somehow in the course of all this shit?
Yeah, so, apparently they were talking about that too, and we'll get into this on some internet research here about James Gunn's thoughts on the MCU and everything like that, the connective tissue and whatnot here. But what does it all mean? Again, my favorite phrase, top ties and Easter eggs to the MCU here. Nick, you want to give us the mid-credits scene? There's a couple of like, yeah, little spots and spurts here throughout the mid-credit scenes.
We get the Kraglin thing like right at the beginning of the credits, where he's testing out the arrow and then it stabs Drax. We see Quill, where he He's dealing with Groot in the course of things, and how he's like, you know, he's like a teenager now, and he's a pain in the ass. We don't know how long that time span was. And then what was it? Stan Lee, right, was also in that where he's talking to the Watchers.
He's kind of like a snitch, and that's kind of thought of to be like, is he now one character throughout all of these movies where he's his appearances, and he's just kind of putting on disguises and then coming back and informing the Watchers of what's going on? Because that's exactly. I think he's talking about his time in Captain America: Civil War as a FedEx guy.
Yes, that one. Stank, right? That was when, and that was in the course of the movie as Rocket and Groot and Yondu are jumping through hyperspace or whatever they called it. But then the other one that was for me, I mean, it felt like the biggest one in all of it. Well, I guess the Stan Lee one was like just to come back to it was kind of cool. But we get the original Guardians, or at least a couple of them from the comics. We get Martin X, who's played by Michael Rosenbaum. That is the guy who actually comes across as like the right hand man to Stallone's character, who is fairly early on introduced as a Guardian, but he's not one of the originals. Yondu was also an original. So was Captain Charlie 27. That's Ving Rhames' character in this movie. And then there's another one who we didn't see, Vance Astro. So I don't know if he's eventually going to get brought up in the course of things, because we all wondered, oh, are we going to get original Guardian stuff with Stallone's character, who's known as Stakar in this? That is his name, but also he's known as Starhawk. He and his wife, Aletta Ogord, who was played by Michelle Yeoh, I think, in this movie, we see the two of them, but it doesn't seem like they have a relationship, but we meet them as well. They're two, like, they're like the second wave, I guess, of Guardians.
Volume two, maybe.
Well played, Wes. If only I was as smart as you. And then we also get Mainframe, who is voiced by Miley Cyrus, and then Krugar, who is an uncredited role. But I don't think those two were ever Guardians. But I don't know if we're ever going to see a flashback or anything like that. But that was definitely like a little nice little teaser, but not as big as the end credit one that you have.
But again, if you get Michael Rosenbaum, Vin Rames, Miley Cyrus, like those are some big names just to have like lurking in the background for a couple seconds there. So that's a little disappointing. So you think they would kind of follow through on that.
Yeah.
But of course, this is the unpaid tease here, is the High Priestess of the Sovereign is told the Council is ready for her, and she reveals that she sparked the next step in her people's revolution, which is Adam, which is a new birthing pod. We thought it would all be Adam Warlock, but we've yet to get him yet. So that's a little disappointing there. But again, what else do we have kind of moving forward?
Well, before we go with that, like if we don't ever get that from the Sovereign, like I would assume we're going to get Adam Warlock at some point. But if we don't get him from them, it's just like, and I don't, that's another character. Like I didn't read the stories about him as much, but it would just be so annoying that you gave us that in the first place and you didn't need to. So like, why, like that would be really surprising if the MCU didn't make good on that in some capacity, even if you make him into like a fake Adam Warlock or something like that. And it's not like the actual next evolution and somehow they flubbed it or whatever, but we need to go back to this at some point.
I think they will. That's just what I think. I don't know. I think it was just, it shouldn't have been in there and James Gunn put it in anyway. That's what I think.
Yeah, that's fair. Let's see. Among the other things that we got, and what does it all mean? We see Howard the Duck hanging out in the seedy dive bar. This is the second time, or the third time, second time up to this point in the MCU, the second time that we've seen him, both times in Guardians movies.
Yeah, and this one, he's talking a little risque. He's spitting a little game there, you know? Yeah, so the time jump hexagons, that's now a reoccurring theme. Again, that's one of the major ties that we've seen here. Again, in Avengers Endgame, WandaVision, Loki, those hexagonal shapes, those things tend to be playing a role of some degree. You know, that was what was surrounding Westview in WandaVision, you know, and that's also where they travel to, getting spit out of in Thor Ragnarok, going to the Devil's Anus, in the same place where they get dropped off to in different places, in Loki as well.
That is an interesting, I didn't catch that. That's so
again,
interesting.
It's all kind of like the time travel. It's probably also in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Mm-hmm. I got to think back to that. I'm not sure. We haven't gotten to that point in the rewatch vault, but we'll be getting there soon.
I'm willing to put money that it is.
Yeah, there you go. Let's see. In the introduction with Ego, we get to meet the Celestials. Now, we had seen I think one celestial head is nowhere. I think that is like a dead celestial head, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
But this is like the first like living celestial that we meet at all. And that's going to help set things up for the Eternals. The course of things.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, according to the comic books, the X gene, but who knows what Marvel and the MCU has in store for the introduction of the X-Men.
We just know that they've opened up the doors to be able to get that soon.
They have many doors they could open at this point here. It's just choosing which one. Who is behind that door, ladies and gentlemen? And also, this is also a kind of end credit scene here. There's a quick flash of a dancing Jeff Goldblum Grandmaster during the credits before his debut, of course, in Thor Ragnarok. They just like flash it for 2 seconds during the end credits there. So I didn't know this. I didn't find this. I read this somewhere. So maybe, you know, more skilled people at home will be able to find it and maybe take a screenshot for us here.
Okay. I did not see that.
Yeah, a little something for you, though. A little something to wet your whistle with.
All right.
The SHIELD Internet Sleuth Award for internet research on the movie. Here, we already mentioned Miley Cyrus, so that was a great pickup by you, getting the uncredited voiceover work on Mainframe. Gunn originally wanted to have Mantis and Adam Warlock appear in the film, but Warlock was written out of the movie because it was getting, quote, too busy. A little what I alluded to earlier. Interviews around the movie, around the time it was released, Gunn said, "I adored what we had done with him. I think we had did something really creative and unique with Adam Warlock, but it was one character too many. I didn't want to lose Mantis, and Mantis was more organically part of the movie anyway." Gunn also noted that Marvel gave him some, quote, blowback for including the Warlock teaser because they felt fans would believe the character would be appearing in Infinity War and Avengers Endgame, which was not the case. But by including the scene, Gunn promised Marvel that he would use his social media presence to clarify for fans that the character would not be seen in either of the Avengers films.
So if you didn't want that, then why not just cut it out?
Yeah, I don't know why he put that. I don't know why he had to put it in there. I mean, right? He cut out everything else and then like, had to stick it in a teaser for some reason. Like, so that's dumb. That kind of pisses me off, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, look, no one's perfect, obviously, but like, that's an odd choice on his end.
Just have everyone come to my Twitter account so they can all get details afterwards. Like, this is like a stupid thing. I don't know. Like.
Yeah, but I don't know why Disney didn't have like an editor come in and say, like, nah, get this out of there. Like, put the kibosh on that. That's strange. Yeah.
They should have. I don't know. I don't know how that would have gone unseen, you know, before the final cut there. During an April 2016 interview, Gunn stated to 20th Century Fox that because 20th Century Fox owned so many awesome cosmic villains and minor characters, that they love to play around with Annihilus and Kang the Conqueror. So kind of interesting that was before the merger, the Fox-Disney merger there, of course. So, of course, we have Kang the Conqueror now in the fold here. But I don't think James Gunn is going to be doing too much to do with Kang the Conqueror or anything like that. That's just probably my hunch.
Yeah, that may end up being the case. I mean, I would think they're going to continue to consult him in some capacity, although – if DC's smart, they're going to keep trying to pull him towards them more and more and try and keep him.
That's what I would imagine. They're going to, I think they're already greenlit for a sequel of the Suicide Squad to the remake of the sequel. And then of course we're getting the, what's it called? Peacemaker series that he's doing too. Right.
Hey, how about the fact that we're doing James Gunn movies in back-to-back weeks? I didn't even realize that episode 130, we're going to be doing Suicide Squad too.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, this is a good primer then. So that even works a little more serendipitous than we thought here. Yeah. And to close out SHIELD Internet Sleuth Awards here, when asked about how the film would connect with the other Phase 3 films in the MCU, Gunn said, this is what I was alluding to before, Nick, quote, "I don't feel beholden to that stuff at all. I think it's really about the Guardians and what they're doing," end quote. So that obviously comes through throughout the course of the movie.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, at least we, I mean, yeah, I don't know about for this one though. I think that one is going to get my vote. Although no, I think the part with the Adam Warlock stuff, like Disney, Marvel not wanting him to include.
It makes a little bit more sense, right? I think that's what you have to go. And that's such the big hang up I think people have about this movie, or, you know, upon rewatch and stuff. And when looking back on it, you know, that would have been the big connective tissue, right, to the rest of the MCU. And then suddenly it's just like, it leaves you lingering. Yeah, so I'm good with that too. Nick, what do you have for the Edith Award for who won the movie?
Well, you kind of had us covered already on this one, so I don't want to go and steal your thunder on the proposal that you had. But there's to me, there's one clear-cut one for this.
Yeah, I mean, the first one, I love Yondu. I thought this was a great going-away party. You know, you talk about a character kind of getting some justice on his way out of a role like that I thought we were missing in Black Widow a little bit. We get this in Yondu, right? It's a full kind of redemptive arc of him getting that Ravager's goodbye, you know, and him getting the Mary Poppins law, y'all. He has like so many great one-liners. Of course, you have that scene kind of breaking out of jail with Rocket and Baby Groot there. So, you know, he may be your father boy, but I'm your daddy. Like, again, great lines throughout all of that stuff. So that's a little bit of a teaser of the categories coming up. But so much of this show, I think, or of this movie, I think Yondu shines in.
Yeah, to me, Yondu is the clear cut winner in all of this. A character who had one cool badass moment in the original Guardians movie, but outside of that, it was just like, yeah, I mean, it's cool because Michael Rooker and stuff. And for those who watched at all the Walking Dead series, of course, you know the actor and know he does a good job. But you go and then have him in this movie and huge. And for a character who's the only original Guardian of the Galaxy, like in the comics that we don't see, that we get to see in the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie, then you go and make us care about him a little bit more. I thought they did an outstanding job with him.
Yeah, I think that's my pick. I think another, you know, good options would be, you know, Star-Lord, Rocket Raccoon. The soundtrack is kind of more of like an honorable mention, but I think Rocket Raccoon, again, you get a little bit more of his backstory and he gets, you know, a little bit more into it, what makes him tick.
Yeah,
which I like a little bit more than the Star-Lord aspect of things.
Yeah, see, Star-Lord would not have been on my who won this one. I thought it was like there sometimes we get clear cut winners for certain you know, not awards and everything. I thought Yondu was the number one and Rocket would have, I guess, been my second, but Starlet actually falls under the next category that we're going to do.
And I think I agree with you on who lost a movie in regards to Star-Lord there, at least being nominated for that. But I think the reason why I had him on for who won the movie is just it made it clear that, you know, I felt like whether that was a derivative from Feige or Disney or Marvel or whoever, that they were going to make Chris Pratt and Star-Lord, you know, the focal point, really prop him up over the rest of the Guardians there, right? That seemed like what they were trying to do. I'm not sure if that was effective in that, but, you know, they're trying to play into the star power of why am I blanking on Chris Pratt there?
Yep. Yeah, but see, the thing for me in the end of all this is like, so maybe Chris Pratt is more the winner and Star-Lord is more the loser because, I mean, he finds out he has a dad, he finds out he has all this kick-ass powers, and then he finds out his dad gave his mom cancer and all this. It's like, to me, it's like, how is he not the loser in all this?
Does lose a lot there. Definitely does. And doesn't he lose the celestial part of him too?
Yep, all gone because he had to go and he had to kill his dad because he was a piece of shit.
I thought Mantis was just kind of a waste of time. The introduction of her.
An ego. Didn't really do it for me. That's fair. But Star-Lord is a clear-cut winner. And you know, talking about ego being a piece of shit, too, he is proof that people can't change in all this, too. So I just want people to keep that in mind.
Yeah, people can't change. Yeah.
Yes. But anyways, that's good. Let's see. That's nice. Mantis, I think these two were clear-cut answers for me. Like Yondu, Star-Lord, no questions asked. I did have Ego as an honorable mention for who lost the movie. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be my number two in all this, just because like, hey, I finally got a kid. I had this whole elaborate plan and it finally worked like a million plus kids later. But now he hates me because I killed his mom and he can't have the same view of the world that I have and all this crap. So it sucks.
Yeah.
And then of course,
and he just sucks in general too.
He also just sucks in general. Yeah. It's like, that's the thing in all this too. Like, he's a celestial being and we just like in and out gone so quickly. I feel like you could have done a lot, lot more with him. As much as, you know, Star-Lord is supposed to have similar powers. The other honorable mention for who lost the movie and all this, and I think he's just perfectly put as an honorable mention, is Taserface.
So he is, I think, fine as an honorable mention, but I think he might be better suited in the J. Jonah Jameson Award for best performance by a side character because he comes out throwing a lot of heat pretty fast. You know, he is chewing up a lot of scenery, you know, and the just the makeup, that it takes from. I think the makeup artist probably deserves some sort of recognition, some flowers for here alone.
That's a great point, Wes. And honestly, when we're I had a really hard time thinking about that for this award because I was like,
who was it? Yeah, who else is it?
Because right? I know you had Stakar as a nominee, and I was like, yeah, mm-hmm. but like we only get something like he is. Like saw it, like 10 minutes on screen max.
Stallone is he's so bad. Like all you see is just Sly Stallone. I don't see a character. I just see Rocky up there in a spacesuit. You know? Yes, it's like I can't help it.
Exactly. And then Kraglin, I mean, he was fine, but he didn't do much to like really win me over. Taserface is definitely the winner for this one. Yeah, he's so like
and over I think the top. With the time frame of the movie, like Yondu, with the screen time, like he's qualified as a side character. He's not a main character by any means, I would say in this, but mm-hmm. like because it's the Guardians, right? And he's not really the Guardian,
right. He's in it so much, but, though. I mean, yeah, he's in the movie posters,
right? Yeah. I know. So that's kind of like who like there's no real side character.
Well, there's like supporting characters, and then there's side characters, and then like that's like Taserface is a side character. I was actually thinking about that earlier because I did think Yondu would never fall under this because he's a supporting character. But yeah, side character. We're talking about more like the bit roles, like what Rhodey was up for. What was it? An Emmy for?
Cameo. The best cameo in the Emmys.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's like along those lines, but. But anyways, speaking of Rhodey, the Terrence Howard Award for casting What Ifs, Wes, you always come up with these and not a ton for this movie.
Well, as we talked about too with sequels, you know, you have a little bit more of an established cast. They seem pretty set on Pom Klementoff there, who played Mantis, her role there, so forgive me. But, you know, they had talks and before settling on Kurt Russell, Matthew McConaughey was in talks to be a villain, whether that was Ego or not, I'm not sure. But he turned it down in favor of the Dark Tower series, which of course was a flop. But I don't know how Matthew McConaughey was Ego, I think he's a little too young or a little too close in age, at least looks wise to Chris Pratt. But I could go with him kind of being more like heady and weird and cosmic with it and kind of taking on that celestial, like taking on the weirdness that is the celestial. Like,
I absolutely
Kurt Russell's too human in this, I think.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. He definitely acts too human. And I think McConaughey and all his weirdness, you could have made him look a little bit older or whatever. I think that would be great. Yeah. It sucks about, I never saw Dark Tower, but I think Tim actually, our former guy in the chair, for those who don't know, he had told me about the Dark Tower series, like the books at first, and said you'd love to read those. It's too bad that the movies didn't work out in the end. But yeah, that's
terrible. Idris Elba too, right? That's a big cast.
Yeah, terrible decision by McConaughey to turn it down in the end. But I think you're right. I think he would have played this better. This is one of the few times where I would have preferred that casting.
Yeah, right. So I think that works out here. And that's the only one there, so that's the winner. So, but this is as we're getting to the end here, the I Am Inevitable Award for the best quote, our last category of the evening.
Yes. So let's see. Where do you you got a couple in here because I got one really long one. So I want to let you go first on what you got.
So one of the few lines that I enjoyed from Drax here was, "Did you make a penis?" That he just kind of jumps. That's like almost like an I think you should leave ghost hunt, ghost house type of line there from Drax when he's talking to Ego about, you know, when Ego's informing the Guardians of how he took human form. And then just that whole discussion that proceeds after that is pretty funny that goes on. But the "did you make a penis" is just kind of like a funny, like laugh out loud moment. Because then Drax is talking about like how his father every Christmas would sit down with his kids and talk about how they conceived one another.
Like, yeah.
That's awesome.
That was definitely a moment that I considered jotting down and all this. But that was something.
Yeah. We got a box full of hands. If that one doesn't work out, it's very casually. Kraglin says to Nebula.
Yeah. When he says in the course of all things too, like, I thought you'd get something that I can't remember the exact words, but
like a necklace or something.
Okay. All right. But you brought up Drax, and for me, I think the first one that I jotted down was from Drax. Humility. I like it. I too am extraordinarily humble. So that's outstanding writing right there.
Well, it's great stuff.
Mantis, the Krabby puppy's so cute, he makes me want to die. Very weird. I don't remember, it was later on in the movie, but I can't remember exactly where. Let's see. Of course, I'm Mary Poppins, y'all. We all remember that one. From Yondu, and he also said he may have been your father boy, but he wasn't your daddy.
Yeah.
In which, in certain contexts, that might
those
be
those two,
weird.
I think, are my favorite in the running right now.
Okay. Well, for me, this is the line I think of when I think of Rocket Raccoon, and I still quote it. Like, you know, maybe mix up a line here or there, but I can remember this one pretty vividly. I'm sorry. I am so sorry. I just keep imagining you waking up in the morning, sir, looking in the mirror, and then seriously saying to yourself, you know what would be a really kick-ass name? Taserface! That's how I hear you in my head. What was your second choice? Scrotum hat? So I that one just killed me.
Yeah, and a lot of the banter and like the one-liners from Rocket throughout all this, you know, he's throwing some high heat through this one. But that's a pretty memorable scene. And again, that kind of just flies in with Taserface's, you know, also throwing high heat there at that moment. So
yeah,
but if I had to go with anything, it's the guy who won the movie. He may have been your father, boy, but he wasn't your daddy. I love that line.
Oh, okay. I would have thought you'd gone with Mary Poppins, y'all.
You know, everyone loves that one. You know, that's true. That's the mainstream one. This one's a little bit more of a deeper cut.
I got to go with the other one, and that's probably more than anything because I think my impression of Rocket as Taserface is spot on.
You mean you doing Rocket who's doing Taserface?
Is exactly what I mean. I like yes.
That. Yeah.
I'm glad you were able to stay with me on that one.
Absolutely. I just want to make sure, yeah, clarify for the people at home. Yeah,
absolutely. So that's it for our Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 rewatch, unless you have anything else you want to.
No, yeah. I think that just about I think that just about clears up everything for the final train aboard the Discharge Depot that's leaving the station. All aboard!
Okay. Well, I'll start us off this time. So I watched Gunpowder Milkshake on Netflix, which actually starred Kieran Gillen.
What, and is that a spy movie?
It's supposed to, like, it's very much John Wick vibes. It's more assassins than spies. Mm-hmm. And it also had Cersei Lannister, and I forget that actress' name. And there's a couple other actresses that people would find familiar. But though, like, it's her. And it's Kieran Gillen, of course, in the same movie we were just talking about as Nebula. This was very disappointing, I think, in the end. Like, it wasn't just like, I'm watching this, I don't really care too much about the plot. Whatever we get, it's fine. It was actually very similar to Wick. The action, like the first real action scene we get is like, what the shit did I just watch? Like, this is someone who's been in like Marvel Disney movies. You would just think like, this would never happen, but there were some other good action scenes in there, but there were a lot of like really, really bad ones, like shockingly bad.
Well, I wonder though, because she's in makeup a lot in throughout the MCU and everything. I wonder how easy it is just to maybe put in a body double. She doesn't have to do any of that stuff. She just does the acting.
That's a fair point. But then my counter to that is you saw Jumanji, right? The one with
right, she was in that as well. Yeah, that's yeah, the point.
Yeah, okay. It's just her face. So I don't know how they screwed that up. Like it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Okay. But that would be a fair point otherwise. Let's see. I also watched the season finale of Kevin Can Fuck Himself. That was on Sunday, and it was weird. Is I think the best way to put it.
Okay.
I know Lauren was a little disappointed because we didn't at all get what we expected. You know, some things I guess maybe a little bit, but there's just a lot of questions that I did not expect to have afterwards. I'm still very much in on this show, don't get me wrong, but it's just like, well, that's not at all where we thought it was going to go. But it's especially the last moment though was like really like holy shit. So I'm still very much on this show, very excited for season two. And then speaking of season two, we've got two of those of Harley Quinn so far. Rewatched that with Lauren. She'd want to watch for a long time. Finally got her to watch it.
Okay.
She absolutely loved it. And for me, it was my third time rewatching it because I have rewatched both series for doing stuff with Goo and actually Billy Dee one time as well.
Right. Yeah.
It's aged very well for me. A lot more laugh out loud moments for me rewatching it. So.
Awesome. Well, very nice. I love to hear it. Love to see you brought it into the horizons of the lady friends here.
Got to reciprocate.
Yeah, that's well confirmed villain here. We know
this
that.
Is true. Yes, I have a shirt that says it.
Yeah, it's got. Yeah, it said so. Right, that's got to be true. Speaking of significant others and lady friends, my wife, my beautiful wife Julia, ended her performing career on Sunday, so she had her final performance. for her, the Bosoma Dance Studio. That's a dance company. I'm not sure if I'm getting the proper name of that right, but that ended up in Rockport, a nice outdoor performance on, yesterday, Sunday here. So Mom and I went up there. We brought the dog up there, you know, had a great time, saw her perform, and that was just entering the next phase of our lives now.
Congrats to her. That's you know, I gotta imagine that's gonna be a weird experience for her because like it's just like an athlete, right? I mean, it's a huge part of what you do. So
congrats she's to her. Still teaching, right? But it's absolutely. I would imagine it's a whole different way of viewing it, right? It's like I'm sure you get the rush and the adrenaline and everything. Like just like you said, like you wouldn't be on the field there, but she's awesome. So she's gonna be. She's got plenty of things. In the pipeline, so far from over, just a different chapter in it. But
congrats to her, seriously, that's awesome.
Yeah, right. Always a congrats to her. So, and to kind of celebrate that, we're going to Booth Bay Harbor on Sunday. So Sunday through Thursday, Nick. So we might have to record an episode in the can here.
That sounds like a plan to me. We can definitely do that.
Booth Bay Harbor, man.
That's next week. Oh, because we have what do we have next? We have
Suicide Squad.
Yeah, is that going to be released on HBO Max or no?
I don't know. No, it will be. Yep,
it will be. Okay, so we may be able to make that work. Then we'll figure that out. We'll figure that out off screen.
Yeah, we got it. We're in good shape.
Yes. Yeah, that's awesome though. And do you have anything else though? I feel like you got another thing.
No, that's it.
Okay, so then that of course brings us to.
Shared Gooniverse.
Finally got it right this time. So for this week in the DSG West, of course, Dork is talking about Fear Street, which I watched all three of those movies. Mm-hmm. Very excited to hear about that. Do we know what the fuck's going on with Mac and Goop?
I don't know what their deal is, man. Their dates are all left and right. They're getting kicked off Apple Podcasts. Like they're having, sometimes I'll get asked to go on a podcast with Goo and solely about Michael Keaton rankings. And then the episode will come out and it has nothing to do with Michael Keaton rankings. Like, I don't know what's going on here. I'm very confused. I wish I had an answer for it, but I Think You Should Leave season two that came out on Saturday.
Right. Which we thought was last week.
This week's episode.
We thought that was supposed to be last week's episode.
I don't know.
I don't understand. But you're right. They did record it late last week. I'm very confused at how they're handling things right now. But I will say that Mac would notified us in the chat about those. What was it? The TMNT Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yeah, those are cool.
Toys. And that was from the comic book series that I read a while back. Absolutely love that series. I highly recommend that for anybody who wants to read it. Normally, this would probably be a good time to talk about that on the show, I guess, for TLDR. But I cannot wait. Goop pointed out, I cannot wait for the Shredder Green Ranger action figure. I'm absolutely going to buy that thing 100% because that the comic looked friggin' awesome. So highly recommend that series for everybody too. Let's see, we got the People for Communism podcast this week. I have them down as Books to Burn Volume 3.
Yes, yeah, that is, of course, it's a can't-miss series. You want to go back and listen to Books to Burn Volume 1, Books to Burn Volume 2. This is just the nail in the coffin. If we know Jason Rossi loves the ending of a trilogy, right? That's always the best one there. So this will be a can't-miss episode on his part.
Yeah, that is that's a decision. That's definitely something on their part. I don't know what the fuck's going on with those guys. Yeah, but anyways, I don't know how they're still part of the DSG, to be honest. But anyways, the book boys are going to be talking about Radiant Black and Shadecraft, two Image books this week. Very excited to talk about those. I've Heard It Both Ways is doing season 3, episode 1 of Psych this week. They just did their season 2 recap.
I was going to say, they had our guy Drake Morocco out there, right?
Yes, they did, from the Crossing State Lines podcast. Now, Get Help. Are you guys on Postal Hawkeye or are you doing?
So I think we might do something for What If, something along there. And maybe the title is a working title here. So stay with me. But, What If we do a podcast on What If? What If, we do a podcast on What If?
I got to see it written out. But
the SEO purposes, it works.
Yeah, it does. I like it. I like it at the jump.
What If? We did an MCU podcast.
Yeah, I kind of like that. If we did if you did an MCU podcast, throw MCU in there. That's good for SEO because I know Goo's very conscious of all that stuff, and rightfully so.
Yeah, of course.
You guys are on the right track with that. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, we're right around it. We'll land it. Yeah.
Yes. And then for the streamers, of course, you got Doc, you have Davey, and you have Shine. Make sure you guys go check all their stuff out on their respective Twitch streams. Mm-hmm. So next week, Wes, we're doing a Suicide Squad, but no live stream, it looks like.
Maybe we'll do a live rapid reaction. Yeah, maybe that'll be on a Saturday or something like that. That could work, huh?
Okay. We will definitely talk that through. But until next episode.
Right. Normally it would be same bad time, same bad place. But as we already established, that's not the case. So I don't know.